This week on the PhD Cast, the chief executive of Ensemble Media criticizes advertisers for being lazy and abusive with their content. And in the wake of Social Media Week, we talk about lessons for brands and advertisers and the ratings of a low, the social media that's not for brands. This is the PhD Cast from PhD Australia. Hey, I'm Chris Stevenson, and welcome to another PhD Cast from PhD Australia. Joining me this week, I've got regulars Angela.
Hello.
And Stuart.
Hi.
And Peter.
Kia ora.
And KZ.
Hello.
How is everyone doing this week?
Rocking.
Great.
Fine.
Rocking, great, and fine.
I'm at the top of the ear spend.
Well, if you're going to be anywhere, you want to be there. This week we'll be doing a roundup of all the news, articles and events that have caught our attention over the course of the week. Angela, let's kick off with you. What's caught your attention this week?
There was a very interesting article in Mumbrella written by Justin Ricketts, who's the CEO of Ensemble, who, as agencies go, I think are up there with some of the best of them. And it was all about...
And when Ensemble are branded content, is that right?
Not only, but they work a lot with UM, so they have a very good, successful content division, but also they do a lot of really good activation stuff.
Never let it be said we don't give a shout-out to
absolutely,
our competitors.
Absolutely, absolutely. Having said that, I'm always willing
ready
to
where,
share
ready
it.
To you.
Absolutely. So his article was about how he believes agencies and firms, being brands, have abused branded content and somewhat turned it into a dirty word. And funnily enough, when I read that, it's kind of manna from heaven for me, reading something like this, because I think it... and this might be controversial, but it validates a lot of what I think about branded content and where it sits in the general ecosystem. The basic tenet of his argument is that he feels that over the years, brands and agencies have kind of misused branded content. And specifically, he's talking about advertiser-funded content here, so longer-form branded content. So this was based off the back of the fact that they launched a program this week, which... was called Target Style the Nation, starring the lovely Gok Wan from the UK.
Who is actually lovely.
Who you met, okay, drop some names there, Chris. He's a
personal
friend of Chris.
I wouldn't go that far.
But it was based around the fact that Target have done a, he's their ambassador for the past year or so. Now, this programme went out at about 10 o'clock after Dancing with the Stars on 7. So technically it's a primetime show, so I know, having worked on some of these things before, to get a brand funded show in primetime, albeit a little bit later, is quite a feat, and it takes a huge amount of work from a huge amount of people. So number one, I give them credit for producing a really good show which would stand on its own ground and on its own merits. I watched it, and I do like those kinds of programmes, guilty secret, but it was really well produced. Target have the naming rights, so it's implicit in the title that they are involved, but that didn't detract from the actual program, which was as good as any of the style programs and style guides that Gok does in the UK.
And that went out on Tuesday night.
That went out on, I believe, Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the argument that it's been abused, the idea of ad-funded content, the branded content, has been abused. What was the sentiment behind that?
I think he thinks that people... I believe, and clearly he does from this article, that branded content and advertising are essentially different things. They come from a different place and they should be embraced in a different way. And it's not just advertising.
What do you mean by that, I'd argue?
Well, this is specifically talking about longer form branded content.
Yeah.
So he believes that, to treat it as an advertiser would, which is to kind of shoehorn your brand into as many places and spaces in the content as possible, is counterproductive to... the efficacy of that program.
But that's a different argument. That's basically saying don't overbrand your branded content. I buy that.
Yes.
But that's not the delineation between advertising and branded content.
Well, that, I think that's a separate argument, and literally we could be here all day with that discussion. But I think, what he was saying is, a bit of a softy approach with regard to the integration within these kinds of programming. These kinds of programs. Now, this particular one, everything about it was Target, so the clothes were from Target. So clearly they didn't have to literally talk about the Target association.
But surely that's the point. If you've got to inject advertising into branded content, then either the idea's wrong or it's not working hard enough in the first place, right?
I guess it depends what you mean by working hard in that context. Like, what do we think was the role of that piece of
augmentation? When I say working hard, I mean augmentation, creating associations between a brand and something else, whatever that might be, and building brand association. And if it's not doing that, then if you feel that you've got to overly advertise it, which is what the article I think is getting to, then clearly what the idea for the content is, what the content is doing, isn't working hard enough at brand building.
Yeah, I agree, and also the fact that you just, when we always talk about it, it's awesome that you have a great piece of content, but you just need to make it as scalable as possible. So yes, it's a really fine line between balancing being over-branded and the association, but also you need to make sure that at least your brand is visible and make sure that more and more people actually are exposed to it.
And it is a fine line. The very notion of augmenting means you have to build an association, right? So the brand has to be an association with the subject matter of the thing you're trying to change.
Which at this point, it was integral to the subject matter, because the whole point of his styling these women was they were styled by Target and with Target clothing. So, you know, the association is there from the get-go. And I think that's quite a good example of brand-funded, bespoke branded content.
So what would be some of the negative ones? What would be...
I wouldn't want to go into too many specifics.
But there have been
examples of when the brand is too obviously and overtly integrated and product placement is too over the top. And I think that can be counterproductive. But to an audience when they're watching.
When you say counterproductivity, the argument around counterproductivity is around, like, the, if you follow Aaron Bogast's thinking, right? Yes, it is typically advertising, but consumers are not bothered by brands, right? There's no actual evidence to say that someone goes, oh, that's sponsored by a brand, or that's the brand involvement, therefore I switch off. So when we're talking about engagement and those kind of things, there's no evidence to potentially to suggest that actually consumers really care that much. So
they do care if it's crap content.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a different point. If it's crap content, that's different.
Sure. But I think that's at the heart of what he's saying. You know, too heavy-handed brand integration can lead to a crap piece of content. They approach this as programming first. You know, what will engage our audience? And how do we weave that brand within to make it a really successful and engaging piece?
And I think that's the point, isn't it? The point is that it's not how well it's branded or anything else. It's like, are we approaching this as a really big ad?
Yeah.
Or
sure.
Are we approaching this as great content, which just happens to come from a brand?
Yeah,
precisely. And I think the latter is absolutely what we should be doing.
But I would still argue that putting the brand in there won't make a difference. Like, as I don't think that's going to make a piece of crap content. You can still have very overtly branded pieces of branded content that are still good. It's still down to the quality. Like any execution, it's still down to the quality of the content.
Content is king, queen, emperor,
absolutely.
And empress.
And speaking of which, well, not all. Stu, what's tickled your fancy this week?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Christopher. Last week was, as most of you know, Social Media Week. So although I didn't get to attend lots of stuff, I did a couple of things. I actually did a little talk at the works about how people were over social media. Obviously a cheerful topic for me to talk about. But I just wanted to run through an article that I read in B&T where Chloe, just kind of listed some of the key nuggets of wisdom that she gleaned across that week period of those different events.
Chloe's Nuggets.
Chloe's Nuggets, in fact. Brilliant.
That could be a regular feature on the PhD.
Chloe's Nuggets. The first one that I thought I completely agreed with was the fact that Facebook isn't always best for your brands. So she argues that the big stalwarts like Dumb Ways to Die and the big campaigns actually didn't naturally revert to Facebook. They tried different formats and the longer tail of different social media networks. And just getting sure the right content on the right vehicle is absolutely right. And I guess I completely would agree with that, and I think Facebook are going for a little bit of a backlash at the moment, just from the whole kind of conversations around deserting youth audiences, as in they're not deserting them, youth audiences are deserting Facebook, and the lack of ability to organically reach your own fan base as well.
Yeah,
as a big one. So I think
the The certainly sense that the some brands feel slightly hostage to their own audiences.
Absolutely. I think Ogilvy research that said only between an actual brand can only reach between organically between kind of 2-6% of its actual organic Facebook page
fans.
Likes, whatever you want to call it. So that's a big shift, and then requires actually quite a lot of continued investment for brands in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then you follow that natural argument by going, well, how much is that delivers a tangible ROI?
Yeah.
So the whole space around actually,
mm-hmm.
what are the metrics around?
And then oddly enough, you get brands actually saying, well, why don't we just build our own media in the first place, and building their own media infrastructure to engage their own customers.
Well, and then that kind of neatly leads on to one of our second points, which is around kind of subscription lists and the power of owned media. And I think in the social media space, and I think on one of the talks that I was giving was around actually the notion of social media is inherently changing. So
mm-hmm.
We look at social media in a very siloed bucket, so it becomes about different platforms. But actually, if you think about it, social media is inherently changing. So are things like Tinder, is that social media? Or TripAdvisor, eBay. Actually, the notion of these social media platforms actually becomes quite eroded. So don't forget, actually, social as a construct sits across lots of media. So it's not just the platform that they exist in. Other things that she mentioned that I thought quite interesting, just the whole kind of tapping on the crowdsourced and the idea of branded content. So as Angela picked up earlier, so the whole kind of longer tail around content that's coming from consumers and not just brands. So a lot of branded content doesn't come from brands, which we kind of know already. But I just think it's interesting to kind of put that in perspective again and just think about how actually there is a longer tail of people out there and whether that's right for your brand and whether you need to manage it. Because I guess for Nutella, for example, whenever you operate in the social media space, which is one of our clients here, we have to be very mindful that we could be kind of promoting overconsumption.
Mm.
So a lot of the fans are promoting sitting down with a tub of Nutella and eating it whole, and that we would never advocate that as a brand. It's not where
yeah.
we sit. So there's an interesting space around mitigating or amplifying the content that comes from the real world.
But then it also comes back to this question exactly about like amplification. So it a little bit goes against the argument, and it's a question whether this argument will change that much of the basically virally distributed content is basically based on lots and lots of paid media. So it comes back to the argument, if much of your content, and there's a whole lot of long tail of awesome content that your fans, for instance, are actually producing that you don't need to amplify, then it raises the question, is there a way for organic, really good branded content to actually spread without paid media behind it? So because that, you could argue that if there are enough people creating enough awesome content for your brand, then you don't really need to invest too much in your own created asset via paid media.
I think that's true, but I think the reality of that never happens. So for every dumb ways to die, there's at least 300 campaigns that never saw the light of day. And I think that's a really important thing to bear in mind. And I think loads of marketers strive for having an awesome idea that will totally go viral. The reality is it won't. The reality is it can only reach potentially around, you only get something like 0.5% reach to 1% of your total campaign reach will come from organic views. And that's people actively going to YouTube or a platform that your content's on. The reality, if you're trying to drive scale, which we know we need scale to drive any tangible results, actually has to come from paid.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of all just boils down to the right message in the right place at the right time, the line I like to use, in that I guess, you know, whether that's Facebook or it's YouTube or whatever it is, it's about how do you create content, how do you involve yourself in the conversation that's relevant on the platform you're advertising in. And I think we have a lot of broadcast channels where we can push ideas out, and I think that when you get to intimate channels such as social, you just need to be respectful of what people are doing and why they're there, and make sure you're relevant. And you know, Chloe's nuggets probably boil down to that: is that if you can make yourself relevant inside the space, you know, you'll naturally get promoted, and people will pass on that content because it has a relevance to them and an importance.
Yeah, in fact, it does say sorry that there's such a thing as a silver bullet or quick fix, and I think that's very true. There is no one. And I think that is a behaviour that we need to kind of work with our clients to mitigate. This idea of, what's your social media strategy? Oh, I've got an always on Facebook campaign and I do some Twitter. is not the, is this the standardised answer, and actually that's not really
the tick of the channel tick in the box is a dangerous place to be.
But that's true for any media. That's like saying
Agreed.
I do TV or I do print.
But we don't. I think the difference is in the current age. What's your social media strategy has become like a buzz phrase, and a lot of businesses are having senior people asking that because they know social media is important, and actually that just inevitably leads you to a platform solution. So actually, the answer to that could be your social media strategy is to, I don't know,
throw money
or do some really interesting things with the voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's your social media strategy is a valid question. It's just doing social.
What's your social strategy versus what's your social media strategy?
Yeah, but doing social or doing Facebook is not a valid answer to that valid question.
Yeah,
yeah, and it also comes back to this previous argument that we had, or discussion we had with Angela as well, like about how distinctive you are in that space. Because you could argue that, and we were having a discussion a couple of days ago about what are the good examples of actually organically spreading branded content, say. And if you think, do you remember the Oscar selfie? That was the Oscar selfie with all the celebrities.
That was the Oscar selfie, everybody.
thank you, Peter. So what I was wondering about as well is that awesome that it got such a huge, it's still I think the most tweeted photo of all times ever or whatever it is, and no, I'm not sure that all those millions and millions of people retweeted or saw it or whatever actually are aware of the fact that it was a part of a Samsung campaign, which we found out like a couple of months later, but this is the thing as well, like we were like a lot of people are applauding that, oh my god, that's amazing, that's a really cool idea. Do people care? Do people know at all? Like media people,
I think the trick to that is that they put their product in a really relevant place and in a situation that is viral in something like the
nobody saw the branding because you just saw the selfie. Like afterwards there was a picture released like having the handset as well.
I was quite conscious of the fact that it was a Samsung phone when it was taken, so I think the effect of that was pretty powerful.
It's interesting, there's no metrics in the awards around that, and I didn't know it was an ad until I read the Cannes entry. And I think it's really interesting. It goes back to the argument we had earlier around what makes good branded content. Yes, it is the idea, but unless the brand's associated with the idea, there's no point. It's not branded content, it's just a lovely piece of content.
And Social Media Week brings us to your snippet of the week, KZ, right?
Yes, exactly. Hello, and it's not myself introducing it. It's
hello.
Like, hello.
Hello.
The new...
That's hello.
Hello. Thank
hello.
You.
Hello.
Hello.
It's a podcast when the Kiwi is always translating for the Hungarian. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah. People in what is it? People in glass houses.
Chinfro nuggets.
So
no matter who they belong to.
Segueing back to Elo, the new social media, which basically like it's I've seen so many articles and news about it like in the last week, and apparently there are about like 30,000 people registering onto this new social media network every day. It's quite interesting because obviously there's so much fragmentation in this space already, and what they are doing right now, what Elo is doing, is it's positioning itself as the anti-Facebook social media, and by saying that they claim that they're free of ads, they are not collecting personal data, and privacy is a really central focus for them, but at the same time it's free, but it's not free, so you can buy premium features on Elo, and there are arguments pro and contra, and I'm still wondering. Right now it's still invitation only, but apparently they will open it for the broader public, and there are some arguments that are saying that yes, Elo is it's amazing now, and everybody is like getting on board with it, but it has been tried and it has been done before by another social network called Diaspora. MySpace probably. And also, it's obviously a space where people want to be active with their friends and families and colleagues. And if you only build on that aspect, then it doesn't necessarily work out, as it didn't really work out for Google Plus either. although they were trying to push for it, but right now what they did, for instance, is they also are opening their services not necessarily on the basis of Google Plus registration, but you can also apply, use their services without, for instance, Hangout. And again, it raises the question, how many of these social media networks actually do we want to have, do we want to use, is it beneficial for us? And what was quite an interesting, what I didn't know about Allo before is that was that it was a social media network targeted for a really specific area. So it was basically bringing together artists and designers, so it had like a really clear direction, and now it's being like opened up for the whole public, and the question is whether it would be better for them as well to actually go and create like these kind of smaller tribes as opposed to being open for
so there's a few things in there. I suppose the first is that we shouldn't be surprised at the emergence of a long tail of social networks. We shouldn't be too surprised at the emergence of a whole range of networks that aren't necessarily big and monolithic and mass reaching, but that cater to specific audiences or niches, just like any other media
fragmentation.
But even pre-fragmentation, even before the great age of fragmentation, there were plenty of media examples that catered to niche.
Yeah, sure.
Whether it was in print, whether it was in TV,
Caravan Weekly.
Exactly. And arguably, actually, it's some of those niches have been most insulated against some of the big changes that we've seen. So first of all, we shouldn't be surprised by the emergence of niche platforms. But does that offer any value to advertisers, given the imperative to get scale and to get reach?
Well, on this platform, no, because you can't advertise. So that feels a little bit difficult for advertisers.
Look,
but the principle of communities, and I think one of the key trends out of Social Media Week was we're seeing increased community fragmentation. So people are trying to find like-minded people and working within the social networks that are they're interested in. So, as I said, Tinder, but also TripAdvisor, there's certain types of mentalities and purposes that people gravitate.
I mean, I'm going to make a big, hairy statement here, and I think where they're going with this anti-Facebook is not particularly constructive, in the sense that, I mean, where Facebook has started to head is that they've obviously got that critical mass around users and active users, and I mean they're almost becoming the kind of aggregator in a social space of tech. I mean, if you take things like Instagram and so on, where they're just integrating things into what is a massive user base and adding features, so they're kind of becoming the social aggregator. You know, Snapchat's another good example, and I think the social space will expand into apps and the use of technology around sharing information content with relevant people. And I think Facebook, it's not about attacking them. I think it's probably now about saying how do you work with them for them to aggregate your features and products into their user base, which no one now will chase.
And should advertisers and agencies be concerned about momentum behind a social platform that pitches itself as not for ads?
Only if we see social media as platforms, and I think that for me is still the biggest problem. It shouldn't be. So if we still are thinking about the social media solution is Facebook or any device or any platform, then we're never going to.
Also, if they're setting this up with the idea of not being ads and that people are going there to not see ads, then the worst thing that we could possibly do is put ads in it. So because that would be putting an irrelevant message in an irrelevant place where someone doesn't want to see it. So I think it's respecting that that's the case.
Yeah.
I suppose.
But at the same time, I'm wondering how much time will it take when people will start sending awesome branded content to each other on Allo as well.
Yeah.
So it
comes back to mass.
Yeah, but it again comes back to the fact that it's not necessarily like a media vehicle, because you can't pay for it, but there will be, or actually both can do it, and you can make a registration, you can do it yourself. That's another question, but still, if the content is useful enough, it doesn't really matter which platform it will be sitting on. Allo, they will be just as well sharing it as they do and paying for.
Let's face it, Ellen's selfie was probably on Allo, so
I love that controversial point.
On which note, that's what we're going to have to call it, on that moment of high controversy. That's it for this week. A big thank you to regulars Angela and Stu and Peter and KZ.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chloe, for your nuggets.
And thank you, Chloe, for your nuggets. And that was the PhD Cast from PhD Australia. Thank you very much for listening. This week on the PhDcast, it's a big content social platform week, and the week that the chief executive of Ensemble criticised advertisers for being lazy with their content, and in the week that saw Hello get traction and momentum in a social media week, we talk about the consequences for advertisers and brands and agencies as content, social and platforms all merge into one big wholesome airiness of ridiculousness. And this is a really stupid intro. Shall I do it again?
Totally use that one.
Yeah. This is the PhD cast of PhD Australia. I can't use that one.
Totally
can't.
To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus at PhD Australia.